Chapter 16. The Singing. When Lina heard the guard shout, terror shot through her. She ran faster than she ever had before, her heart pounding wildly. Behind her, the guards kept up their shouting, and she knew that if other guards were nearby, they would come running. She had to find a hiding place. Ahead of her was Bilbalio Square. Was there a spot she could duck into? And like an answer, Dune's words came back to her. The library. It's almost always open, even on holidays. She didn't have time to think. She didn't ask herself whether Edward Pocket would be willing to hide her, or whether there would even be a good place to hide in the library. She just ran for the passageway that led to the library door and darted down it. But the library door wouldn't open. She turned the knob frantically. She pulled and pushed. And then, at the same time that she heard the running footsteps of the guards coming into the square, she saw the small handwritten sign stuck to the door. Closed for the singing. The guards were very near now. If she ran, they would see her. She flattened herself against the wall, hoping they wouldn't think to look in the library passage. But they did.
"Here she is!"
yelled one of the guards. She tried to shoot past him, but the passage was too narrow, and he caught her by the arm. She pulled and twisted and kicked, but the chief guard had her now, too. He gripped her other arm with fingers that felt like iron.
"Stop your struggling!" he shouted.
Lina reached up and grabbed a handful of his wiry beard. She pulled with all her might, and the chief guard roared, but he didn't let go. He yanked her forward, almost off the ground, and the two guards dragged her across the square at an awkward, lopsided pace that made her stumble over her own feet.
"You're hurting me," Lina said. "Don't hold so tight."
"Don't you tell us what to do," said the chief guard. "We'll hold you tight till we get you where you're going."
"Where is that?"
said Lina. She was so enraged at her bad luck that she almost forgot to be afraid.
"You're going to see the mayor, missy," said the chief guard. "He'll decide what to do with you."
"But I haven't done anything wrong."
"Spreading vicious rumors," said the guard, "telling dangerous lies calculated to cause civic unrest."
"It's not a lie," she said.
But the guard gripped her arm even more tightly and gave her a shove so she stumbled sideways.
"No talking," he said,
and they walked the rest of the way in grim silence. A few people had already gathered in Harkin Square, though the workers were still getting it ready for the singing. Street sweepers crossed the square back and forth, pushing their brooms. Someone appeared at a second-floor window of a building on Gilly Street and unfurled one of the banners that was always displayed for the singing. A long piece of red cloth, faded after years of use, but still showing its design of wavy lines representing the river, the source of all power. That was for the Song of the River. There would be a banner on the Broad Street side of the square, too, this one deep yellow gold with a design like a grid to represent the Song of the City, and another banner on the Otterwill side for the Song of Darkness. Perfectly black, except for a narrow yellow edge. The guards marched Lina up the steps of the gathering hall and through the wide doorway. They took her down the main corridor, opened the door at the end, and gave her one last push, a push that caused her to stagger forward in an undignified way and bump up against the back of a chair. It was the same room she'd been in that other, much happier day, her first day as a messenger. Nothing had changed. The frayed red curtains, the armchairs with the upholstery worn thin, the hideous mud-colored carpet. The portraits on the wall looked down at her sorrowfully.
"Sit there," said the chief guard.
He pointed at a small, hard-looking chair that faced the large armchair. Lina sat. Next to the chair was the small table she remembered from before, with the china teapot and a tray of china teacups with chips around their edges. The chief guard left the room, to find the mayor, Lina supposed. The other one stood silently with his arms folded across his chest. Nothing happened for a while. Lina tried to think about what she would say to the mayor, but her mind wouldn't work. Then the door to the front hall opened, and the mayor came in. It was the first time Lina had seen him up close since she had delivered Looper's message to him. He seemed even more immense. His baggy face was the color of a mushroom. He wore a black suit that stretched only far enough across his vast belly for one button to connect with its buttonhole. He moved ponderously across the room and settled into the armchair, filling it completely. Next to his chair was a table, and on the table was a brass bell the size of a fist. The mayor gazed for a moment at Lina, with eyes that looked like the openings of tunnels, and then he turned to the guard.
"Dismissed,"
he said, waving the back of his hand at him.
"Return when I ring the bell."
The guard left. The mayor swung his gaze back to Lina.
"I am not surprised," he said.
He lifted one arm and pointed a finger at Lina's face.
"You have been in trouble before, going where you shouldn't."
Lina started to speak, but the mayor held up his hand. It was an oddly small hand with short fingers like ripe pea pods.
"Curiosity," said the mayor. "A dangerous quality. Unhealthy. Especially regrettable in one so young."
"I'm 12, said Lina.
"Silence," said the mayor. "I am speaking."
He wriggled slightly from side to side, wedging himself more firmly into the chair.
"He'll need to be pried out of it," Lina thought.